Blog Talk Radio.
Take my love, take my land, take me where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me. Take me out to the black. Tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea. You can't take the sky from me. There's no place I can be since I found serenity. You can't take the sky from me.
Good evening. You're live with Tex and Rex. Irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your host, Rex, broadcasting to you from the Imperial City, and I'd like to throw this out to Karl Rove. I am the law, and so are you people. Remember that in these United States, the government only operates with the consent of the governed. We are the law. Keep that in mind. And as a small disclaimer, I will be lip-syncing tonight's show. Any questions?
And this is Tex. I am dialing in from right behind you. And the call is coming from inside the house. So welcome to another Tex and Rex show. We took the night off for the Hyper Super Mega Bowl last night. And but now we're back on a Monday evening. So, Rex, what's on the agenda for tonight?
Well, you mentioned taking last night off. And just to be clear, you know, the hyper mega bowl, as you called it. Look, you know, football is a great American game, and the Super Bowl is the ultimate game of the season. And I thought it actually one of the best Super Bowl games we've seen lately. It was very, very, very good. the problem is that the average American, especially males that may vote Democrat, knows more about the stats of his favorite sports idol than he does about his congressman. And that's a significant problem. Look, sports is wonderful. Sports is something that we should encourage and participate in and enjoy. But when it becomes a priority over what's actually important in your life, specifically your family, your faith, and the state of your country, you got a problem. And this is exactly how the emperors in Rome controlled the masses, through bread and circuses. Keep them fed, keep them entertained, and they will be easy to control. I did notice that this year's halftime show text wasn't as full of satanic Illuminati symbolism as last year's show with that Madonna Louise Ciccone or whatever her name is. She definitely hoarded up for Satan a little bit more than Bouncy or what's her name, Beyonce. You know, Jay-Z's little Illuminati whore. But there was definitely some Illuminati symbolism in there because they're flouting it in your face. They're telling you that, hey, we control the money supply and we can buy and sell your politicians. And one of those politicians has been bought and sold pretty easily, Tex. Appears to be that little, pesky, bald piece of shit from your state, little Karl Rove. Would you agree?
Well, that's true. I think he's buying people is what he's doing rather than getting bought. His ego is insatiable, and it's fed by dollars, apparently. But to go back to the Super Bowl real quick, you know, one of the things that was kind of interesting is that people tend to vote in sports the person who, they tend to support their team. Their team, right or wrong, no matter who's on their team, it's their team because of the jersey, and with free agency and moving around and all that kind of stuff. You know, your team really is just a jersey, and they get some warm bodies to fill that jersey, and who knows who's behind it. And that's part of the problem with the political parties these days, is they're playing musical chairs with politicians and saying that, oh, I'm a conservative. I'm running as a conservative this time because that's the team that I'm on. So those are the things that I say. And then I say those things, and then I get in office, and I do whatever I want. But one of the interesting things about the Super Bowl is that the tickets were running something like $2,800 a pop. And once it became clear that the people going to the Super Bowl were going to be the 49ers and the Baltimore Ravens, two teams that tend to have very regional appeals because, you know, Baltimore, the people who support the Baltimore Ravens are in and around Baltimore.
Let me just correct you on that. It's not Baltimore Ravens. It's the Baltimore Ravens, okay? So you got to pronounce it properly. Okay.
That's right.
Continue.
Baltimore. Same thing with the 49ers. There's a lot of teams out in California for this competition. So you had two fairly regional teams. Well, as a result, the tickets immediately dropped from about $2,800 down to $1,400 to go because there was less interest. Well. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that a lot like this most recent election that we had where nobody really liked these candidates and the ticket price on election day dropped in the sense that the number of voters showing up to vote just left. What if it was back in the old days, the bad old days, where you had to pay a poll tax to go pay? Think anybody would be paying to go vote Mitt Romney? No.
But maybe if you paid, you would get a Subway sandwich.
Well, you know, that's true, actually, now that you mention it.
But I guess if we were paying, maybe he'd throw in some chips and a drink with that, too, you know?
That's right. But the
at least call me by my name when you're, giving it to me, please.
Not only do the ticket prices tell you something, but you notice how Baltimore was doing really good, or Balmore was doing really good, and then they had, like, the halftime where Beyonce did her thing, and the 49ers went back and started chewing on deer antlers as much as they could. They just had a big bowl of boiled deer antlers to make them soft so they could, you know, gnaw them down. And then they came out, and they're like, okay, it's second half. You know, we're second half team, so we're going to do it. And then they got that 109, later 108-yard kickoff return. And immediately the lights went out. I assume the coach went over and just urinated on the nearest transformer he could find to shut that thing down. While he went back and was like, eat more deer antlers. That was not enough. We need elk antlers in this thing. But I thought that was kind of ironic because that's very similar to what happened at the Republican National Convention on that Monday. They just shut the power off.
Yep. That was a little Prince Pubic, right?
That's right. Well, who is sometimes if you look and in the right light, you can see the strings on him because the puppet master is the person you were talking about earlier, and that would be Mr. Karl Rove.
Mr. Karl Rove, puppeting little clown Prince Pubic. And yeah, I
do
remember
we have
when
an
the light.
MC Rove clip, by the way?
I don't have an MC Rove clip.
We need that really bad.
Well, you know, maybe one of these days we'll actually get a producer and actually get our shit together. But until then, we'll just have to play it off the cuff. But I remember that that Monday when the lights went out in Tampa. It was because of that hurricane, wasn't it? Because you and I were there. That hurricane, man, that thing was
Absolutely devastating.
Frightening.
Well, it was a weird hurricane because it was transparent. It was actually clear. It was like Wonder Woman's airplane or something. You couldn't see it half the time.
Yeah. I mean, I remember I a couple of times did have a little trouble keeping my my cigar lit as we sat and watched out over the Gulf of Mexico in Tampa while the Republicans, for the safety of the delegates, had to cancel the convention on that first day. It had nothing to do with the fact that Romney didn't have enough delegates to secure the nomination or that they were
actually
illegally changing the rules at the last minute. That had nothing to do with it.
No. And now I can correct you about a name. It's actually the Gulf of Mexico. No, actually, it's the Gulf of Texas. That's what it is. But
the Gulf, yeah. Well, it should be called the Gulf of Texas, but who knows?
That's right. Yeah.
Maybe we'll rename it the Gulf of Mexico so that we can be a more inclusive country and a more inclusive party, because apparently that's the lesson learned from the staggering loss that the Republicans suffered in 2012 was that the Republican Party needs to be more inclusive, not more exclusive. It shouldn't be a good old boys club. It should welcome women and Latinos and gays and every other hyphenated American you could possibly find, right?
Well, of course, and those things are fine if you welcome people based on the fact that they believe in the principles of freedom and liberty, that it becomes problematic if you start appealing to them as an other, and that really is what the Democrat Party does. The Democrat Party views everyone as an other, as part of a group, and then you appeal to them based on this false identity that you've given them as part of the group. You don't appeal to them on the principles of individual freedom and liberty, which is what unites us all, because the Democrats and the Democrat Party and of late the Republican Party have decided to employ the divide and conquer strategy, which is predefine everybody as being part of some sort of group and then keep them divided and keep them fighting after their own or their right or their entitlement vis-a-vis all the other groups that they have created so that they can maintain control. Because only they, the puppet masters, can provide the things that you and your group needs rather than to provide a fair playing field, the individual freedom and liberty that's needed so that we can all succeed on our own without their influence. And that's
Of course, Tex. I mean, let's face it. You know, you need to appeal to people on the, you know, color of their skin, their gender, the size of their 1040 or whatever other kind of identity divider you can find. Because, you know, appealing to people on principle, there's a problem with that. If you appeal to you have to have some, and then B, those people might actually expect you to adhere to those principles. And, you know, God forbid in politics you do that, because if you have to adhere to principles and you can't be politically flexible, or as one of Mitt Romney's favorite endorsements, like Jenna Jameson, extremely flexible. I think Romney was the only person that had more positions than Jenna Jameson in the last election. It's interesting you bring that up, because as I was posting the show for people to come join us, and just to let everybody know, if you're listening to us in Blog Talk Radio, you can click follow right below the show icon, and you will receive notifications of broadcast times in your Blog Talk Radio profile and associated email, which can be important because as we did leading up to the winter meeting, we ended up having a midweek show, and we had RNC committeeman from Maine, who was trying to challenge Little Rince Pubic for the RNC chair, Mark Willis, on a special Wednesday show. If you were following the show, you would have gotten that that update. And obviously, we rescheduled last night's show to today, and so you would have that information. You can also go on Facebook to the Tex and Rex Show page and like the page, and you will receive in your news feed broadcast times and such. And we have a new little creation there, Tex. It is a Facebook group where people can comment on the articles, links, and other things that are associated with the episodes, and that is Tex and Rex's Liberty Militia. So look for us there. The links are in the Blog Talk Radio chat. But as I was posting the show, I found a couple of quotes which I find quite interesting. I'm going to read you just three of them. The first one is, "But instead of this world unification ushering in an age of prosperity and peace, as most globalists believe it will," and this is someone referring to the, you know, globalist agenda, "it will be a time of unimaginable human suffering as recorded in God's word. The Antichrist will tightly regulate who may buy and sell." This is someone who people would argue kind of could be the father of modern conservatism in these United States. In fact, I would suggest that before this man wrote his famous book, those of us on the right tending towards, and as we've said many times on this show, the proper right in this country is absolute anarchy and the proper left is total government. And our founding fathers were astute enough to put us slightly to the left of total anarchy, which is a limited government constitutional republic. That was the people on that side of the political spectrum were not really referred to as conservatives in this country until this man wrote his book. In fact, our founding fathers, who are ostensibly very conservative at the time, were referred to as liberals, but the progressives have since stolen that word. That quote that I just read to you was from Russell Kirk. And if you have are not familiar with Russell Kirk, I suggest you look up his work, because it is kind of where
Starship Enterprise for a time.
Yeah, after Captain
Pike, Kirk.
Right? Yeah, Russell T. Kirk. Yeah, different Kirk, but close. And then following up on Mr. Kirk's conservative statement, let's take a look at what another conservative had to say. "Group rights trap us within our own group. Each association is measured by genes rather than compatibility. Group rights would constitute America into a seething band of competing, legally defined groups maneuvering against one another for governmentally imposed special privileges." Does that sound familiar? That's none other than Speaker Newt Gingrich. And to follow up on that, "You don't have freedom because you are a hyphenated American. You have freedom because you are an individual, and that should be protected." And that's none other than the Honorable Congressman Ron Paul from your state. That's conservatism. And the Republican Party,
darn tootin',
which is allegedly the conservative party, which apparently, based on their behavior of late, is nothing more than controlled opposition for the Democrats. The difference is that if you read the Democrat platform, it's pretty heinous. And in fact, it specifically in there talks about, you know, reproductive rights, which is just another word for abortion. So therefore, they want to kill American babies before they are born, which precludes any orthodox small-o Christian from even belonging to that dastardly organization. However, the Republican Party platform is different. In fact, and I don't know if many Republicans know this because I don't know if Republican voters pay attention and read the actual platform. Frankly, I know for a fact that the congressional critters absolutely don't read the platform and they don't read the Constitution. But the platform of the Republican Party, as recently as the one adopted in 2012, says, "This platform is dedicated with appreciation and reverence for the wisdom of the framers of the United States Constitution, who gave us a republic, as Benjamin Franklin cautioned, if we can keep it." Now, that's nice. As a conservative, as a liberty lover, as someone who thinks the Constitution is the closest thing you can get to perfect governance on this side of heaven. I like that. And a party that professes that's the foundation on which it is built, that's a party that, you know, I would like to belong to. But I don't, because they don't act that way. A republic, at least as we understand it, is a federated republic, which means that it is a federal structure. And we keep power diffused and as local as possible and only transfer it up the chain when absolutely necessary and only within specific confines. Unfortunately, it seems that Karl Rove, Little Prince Pubic, John Boehner, John Sununu, and all those other so-called Republicans, what people refer to as the Rhino establishment, they're running the Republican Party on the opposite framework. Wouldn't you say so, Tex?
Well, absolutely. And they're doing it on purpose, I believe. The concept is that in Washington, conservatism is not popular because Washington is where they go and, like Scrooge McDuck, they roll around with the bulldozer with all the gold coins and they push them from one corner to the other and they push them out of the warehouse onto their friends. And conservatives are the type of people who say, hey, that's our money. And that is not a popular position. And so it's kind of fun to run the steam shovel pushing the gold coins around. And Republicans who have been there doing that for a while don't really like it if people come up and say, hey, that's my money, that's not your money, and you shouldn't be doing that. And the response is, there's nothing wrong with what we're doing, there's something wrong with you for opposing us. And that's exactly what's going on, and hence the rift in the Republican Party, which officially the sort of civil war within the Republican Party is going on. A new shot has been fired. The opponents have now a new banner, a new flag to rally around, and maybe we ought to talk about that a little bit.
The new flag. Yes, it's a brand new organization that is going to be the salvation of electoral victories. It is a great model. I believe it is called the Conservative Defeat Project. Is that what it's called?
No, it's called Karl Rove's Conservative Kill Pack.
Ah, Karl Rove's Conservative. This is different than cross swords. Cross swords?
Yes.
Sword crossing, cross streams. What's it? Oh, crossroads. Crossroads. Sorry.
Yes.
Cross streams, that's Ghostbusters. I forgot.
It's called Conservative Victory Project. And its goal is, according to Stephen Law, who is president of American Crossroads, which would be Karl Rove's super spectacular failure pack from the last 2012 election. He's president of that. And so Stephen Law says, quote, we don't view ourselves as being in the incumbent protection business, but we want to pick the most conservative candidate who can win. Oh, God. Okay, so we're back to this one. Okay, so
Bill
let me
Buckley.
Tell you.
Bill
yeah.
Buckley, right?
Yeah. But when Bill Buckley was saying it, he actually wanted conservative candidates and ones that could win, whereas what Stephen Jay Law wants are, we want the least conservative candidate that can't win. That's what it has become, and this is degenerated down to. So this is the new organization, and they are taking aim at any candidate that the Tea Party, the grassroots, supports. You know, we are the people who put these people back in power in 2012.
Shame on
so
us.
Now they're focusing, yeah, exactly, shame on us. Now they're focusing the sights back on us and on conservatives, and they're saying what we really need more of are Dick Lugers, we need more Lindsey Grahams, more John McCains, more Bob Dole's, and collaborationists.
A bunch of tasteless politicians with no passion, and some of them are a little bit light in their loafers.
Exactly. And the deal is that they believe that if the people of Iowa, so we have this thing heating up here with Representative Steve King and Karl Rove, where they are trying to get him not to run for the Senate because they believe that that's going to be a problem for them.
Right, and this is not the Stephen King who wrote the book It, which I believe was about Prince Pubis.
Yes. Now, this is Representative Steve King. It's Stephen Law who's heading. So you got a battle of the Steve versus Stephen going on here. But Stephen Law is the head of Karl Rove's conservative Kill Pack, and Representative Steve King is six-term Iowa Republican congressman, obviously from Iowa, and they are targeting him because there is an open seat for Senate, and he is one of many people who are considering running for this thing, and they want to shut down his candidacy as quickly as they can. And how quick can they shut it down? Well, they're already planning hard-edged campaign tactics, including television advertisement against candidates whom party leaders see as unelectable and a drag on the efforts to win the Senate. So the thing is, Iowans, I know you think that you're important and you're citizens and maybe a semi-sovereign or something less than that state in the United States, but realistically, you can't just go choosing who you like for the Senate if Karl Rove doesn't like him. That he hasn't been vetted by Karl Rove. You can't just go in there willy-nilly voting for who you want to and doing what you want. Like, you got free will or you're a free citizen. You've got to check with the leadership. And the leadership does not like this guy. And so what they're going to do is they're going to start vetting conservatives heavily during the primaries.
Yeah.
And they won't be vetting the rhinos. I'll just tell you that.
Yeah. So they want yes men. I mean, what you're telling me is that they just want, you know, insipid, tasteless, you know, douchebags who can message well, which means that they can spew out Karl Rove's talking points as opposed to actual conservative principles and win on merit as opposed to, quote, messaging, which is just a PR word for getting the word out from a central organization through multiple outlets as opposed to having a series of candidates who are running on the same principles because they believe in the same things, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's pretty much.
Well, wouldn't you say, Texas, that they're kind of doing us a favor, though? I mean,
well,
I believe
yes.
it was...
I mean, go ahead.
Well, I was just saying, I mean, think Eric Erickson had a great quote on Red State. He said he's referring to, what was this thing called again? The Republican Defeatist Project? The Republican Victory Project.
Yeah.
Conservative Victory Project. Bullshit. Eric Erickson said, I dare say any candidate who gets this group's support should be targeted for destruction by the conservative movement. They've made it really easy now to figure out who the terrible candidates will be in 2014. No mince words there. I like it.
And also, these guys lose elections all the time. So if you want to win at all, you could tune into Fox News, and whoever Karl Rove says is a good candidate, just go vote against him. Because Karl Rove's a moron. He doesn't know what he's doing. He thinks that the future of the Republican Party is the Rhino Party. I mean, look, since Ronald Reagan, this party's been run by the Bushes, or Bush surrogates, and it's been doing progressively worse and worse and worse. The bright spot of this party, and I mean, look, let's talk, since Franklin Roosevelt, okay, the bright spot of this party has been Ronald Reagan and Newt Gingrich.
Mm-hmm.
The rest has been bollocks. And so along comes Karl Rove, who wants to bollocks it up. Karl Rove has no elected position. He fancies himself a kingmaker. He's got a whole bunch of money. And the last thing he wants is you guys coming in and voting for who you want, who he doesn't want, because he's the kingmaker, and we all need to listen to him, which is why he's on fucking Fox News again. Can't get rid of this guy.
Well, they put him in timeout for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, they did. But like a particularly virulent form of cancer, the guy continues to return over and over again. So,
like a cockroach.
You know, look, yeah, exactly. Fortunately, he announces himself and he picks these candidates and he tells you who they are on television, and you just have to stop supporting them. And fortunately, at the moment, most of the Republican grassroots is demoralized, irritated, angry, and upset. And they don't like the leadership, and they don't really like Karl Rove. So you can get these people to open their eyes and say, look, let's stop supporting this guy. Take him out of this kingmaker role. How did he get there in the first place? Why does anybody listen to him? They listened to him because of the 2000 election. Then he became political advisor to George Bush. I believe we all remember.
That 2000 election, that was a great victory. You had to have the Supreme Court decide it for you. Good move, Carl.
Yeah, freaking genius.
You know, that's probably...
And you're running against, you run against Al Gore, who's made entirely of recycled cardboard. I mean, and it got thrown to the Supreme Court.
And I mean, I think that's probably why, you know, before Fox News put him in timeout, is because he had that meltdown and got in a fight with their election desk over the decision, because he actually, I think, believed that his Romney bot was going to win. He was running around, you know, Fox News in New York, running around like, you know.
Now what the fuck are we supposed to do? Where's the real pretty shit now, man?
And so, you know, Ailes put him in timeout for a couple of weeks, but now they're resurrecting him like a cockroach. You said Kingmaker, though, but, I mean, isn't Lindsey Graham one of his puppets?
I believe so, yes. Well that
would make
Paul Rolfe would like to see more Lindsey Grahams in the future.
Well, then that would make him a queen maker, wouldn't it?
Touché.
But you know, Tex, I mean, it's fascinating to me that, you know, here they are kind of making a litmus test for conservatives in order to be screened out, you know, from causing controversy by saying stuff like, you know, the Constitution is the supreme law of the land, federalism stands, states' rights, nullification, Second Amendment, that kind of stuff, which, you know, freaks people out. So we don't want that kind of controversy. But aren't they also throttling conservatives that are already kind of in the party structure? I mean, look what we did for a couple of weeks trying to just trying to help Mark Willis challenge Priebus for chair. I mean, we're all fairly confident it was going to be next to impossible for him to actually be elected chair, but just to try to get him to be in a position where he could just challenge Priebus proved to be impossible.
Well, the Kingmaker decided that Priebus was the guy. And so you can't have somebody coming along and spoiling what's happening. I mean, that's the thing. The Kingmaker decides, and the people don't decide. It's your job is to applaud. That's all you're there for, is to applaud and make them feel good. This is party by dictatorship. This is rule by Karl Rove's fiat. At least in his own mind it is. What really it is the destruction of the party itself, because you've seen these types of dictatorships before rise up from time to time based on ego and all these people who think that they're all that and that they can see further than the others. And next thing they know, they wake up, well, if they're lucky, they wake up with a horse head in their bed. But, you know, usually they wake up with several rods of sharpened iron in their internal organs. But, you know, this type of thing does not end well, because this isn't about, the Republican Party isn't about the stroking the ego of Karl Rove or the big donors so that they feel like they control the game. It's about getting the support of the American people and governing in a direction that they like, because governments that don't govern in a direction that the people like, eventually things turn out really bad. And you can ask.
I'll say. Sorry, please continue.
So the Founding Fathers wrote systems into our Constitution to prevent those sorts of things from happening, and here we have someone who, for their purposes of their own ego, are trying to short-circuit these systems and then go about destroying actual conservatives in the Conservative Party, I would remind you, in order to promote Democrat light in the opposition party, who will go work directly with the party that we tend to be opposed with, not because we oppose their jersey, but because we oppose the socialist principles that they have adopted, the Keynesian principles that they seem to be implementing everywhere, in order to try to change the direction that the country is going in, because most Americans don't think the country is going in the right direction, and so we solve these things at the ballot box. And here we have somebody trying to game the system and eliminate people who otherwise honorable men and women who could go into office and begin to affect the type of change that the American people actually want to see. Instead, they want to go put their puppets in control who will continue to do the exact opposite of what the American people want and let the country get worse and worse and worse and worse while they continue to do better and better and better. And
that old duopoly boy.
Exactly. It's not sustainable. Over the long term, that's a term the left likes a lot. It's not sustainable. You can't continue to do that because eventually you reach a breaking point.
Well, Tex, I have to say I agree with that analysis 100%. It was very cogent, and I think that we're seeing. I think we're actually beyond that point. I mean, I think that August, well, frankly, you could say 2008 was really that point, or you can even go back to the day they ousted Newt Gingrich from the speakership was that point. But I really think that August in Tampa was really that tipping point, and they've had so many chances to realize their mistake and back away from it since then, but they haven't. I mean, we've seen them go from the dastardly corruption that was just out in the open in Tampa to a horrible campaign of deceit, trying to paint this you know, liberal Massachusetts moron as a conservative, and it didn't wash, to reelecting Boehner, capitulating on the fiscal bluff, raising the debt ceiling, reelecting Priebus with no opposition, and then I believe that they've also kicked out the duly elected chairman of the Alaska Republican Party because, you know, he was one of those Ron Paulers, those crazy people that love the Constitution and that large and diverse group of young people who we want to get out of the party so that we can turn around and say, we want to appeal to these people. Well, you did. Ron Paul did. And Ron Paul's been a Republican for 40 years. He appealed to them, and then you kicked them out. And now it's happening all over the place. We saw Justin Amash get removed from his committee. And we've got on the line with us a gentleman from Wisconsin, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, I believe that you are chairman of the Campaign for Liberty. And this is Todd Welch. Todd, you are live with Tex and Rex.
Yes, that's correct. Thanks for having me, guys. I am the state coordinator of the Wisconsin Campaign for Liberty.
Excellent. Well, thanks for joining us.
Well, welcome to the show.
You know, just to give everybody a little bit of the housekeeping rules, Tex and Rex, we don't really do interviews. We just invite people who want to get the message of liberty and authentic conservatism. And just so that we're clear for everybody, when we say conservatism on this show, we mean people who want to conserve the principles that are written in liberal documents, and those would be specifically the Declaration of Independence, the Articles of Confederation, and the United States Constitution. So, Todd, you want to tell us a little bit about, you know, what the party establishment structure is doing up in Wisconsin?
Sure, absolutely. I just give a little backstory. Last year, I was elected to be delegate out of the state of Wisconsin to the Republican National Convention, which I was extremely happy to be elected and excited to go down there and represent Wisconsin, which I believe I did very strongly. And we, down at the RNC, we fought against the rule changes and such that you guys were talking about a little bit ago, where Reince Priebus and others were basically trying to change the rules to stop the grassroots from having as much of a say in the party. And they were partly successful, but we also partly beat them back by holding their feet to the fire, trying to force them to follow the rules, but they did kind of gloss over us in the vote in the end there. So that is part of what the people here in Dunn County, the establishment in the Dunn County Republican Party, didn't like so much. Also, they didn't like that I hold Republican candidates accountable to principle and accountable to the Constitution. When they make bad votes or they do bad things, I call them out for it on Facebook and through mass emails and any other way I can do so, because the only way we can make them uphold the principles that they've sworn to uphold is by holding their feet to the fire and making sure we force them to do that. But the result of all that is that the Dunn County Republican Party refused to renew my membership. They basically sent me a certified letter saying that my actions at the convention, Facebook postings, calling out actions by Republican candidates and such were not honorable actions within the Republican Party, and I was failing to uphold the unity of the party. So they tried to stop me just by denying my membership. Now,
but they didn't embrace you holding them accountable? I can't believe it.
Yeah, surprising, isn't it? You would think after after some of the things and the defeats that we've had in the past, that be looking for a new direction and actually standing up for conservative principles, but
I guess not so much. The voters had to say. Yeah, well, you know, they called me the other day, well, not the Wisconsin party, but the Texas party called me the other day and was saying that it was time to renew my membership. I was not a member in good standing, and my membership seemed to consist of me giving them money. So, you know, I would be happy not to be a member to support a party that basically is pushing forward a bunch of rhinos rather than standing up for the conservative principles that the party says that it's supposed to stand for. So, you know, what really is membership about? I mean, membership is about a lot of things. It's about monetary support. It's also about support by arguing for the party amongst, you know, your family and friends and people you know, going out and holding signs and that sort of thing. And if the party doesn't stand for what you believe in, and certainly if it's basically working against your interests, who wants to be part of that organization? And I think part of the problem the party is facing is, yeah, you can get a whole bunch of people with a lot of money from various organizations to support Karl Rove, but you'll never get the heart of the people. And who's going to hold your signs? Who's going to show up and do anything for you? Who's going to show up on election day and vote for you? And they think, well, people will just file in anyway. Well, I think that time is coming to an end.
Well, I think it's the hypocrisy, guys. I mean, the hypocrisy of it is just unbelievable because, you know, I mean, I hate to say it, but I think that most members of the Democrat Party might be well-intentioned, but, you know, they're quite possibly of diminished intelligence because their party clearly states that, you know, they're out to, you know, plunder other people for your benefit. Well, you know, that might work for a little while, but eventually, as Margaret Thatcher said, you will run out of other people's money and then you'll be left with nothing and you won't even have the skills to stand on your own. But the Republican Party says that they affirm the Ninth Amendment. And clearly in the platform, so you would say, hey, look, if this is what they believe in their platform, then this is something I agree with, so I'm with them. And you would expect that they would operate their own internal business under the same principles. It says, this speaks most eloquently for itself. The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. This provision codifies the concept that our government derives its power from the people, and all powers not delegated to the government are retained by the people. This is an essential feature of our governmental system, and we, meaning the Republican Party, therefore celebrate the grassroots rediscovery of this and other constitutional guarantees over the last 4 years, and welcome to our ranks all our fellow citizens who are determined to reclaim the rights of the people that have been ignored or violated by government. So after reading that platform, after reading that platform, I want to ask you, Todd, what's your problem with the Ninth Amendment, and isn't that why the Republicans don't want you in their party?
Well, yeah, and as we all know, you know, rules are only as good as the people who are enforcing them, as we found out by, you know, we have the Constitution of the United States, which clearly lays out the way the United States is supposed to be run, and the people in charge are not following that. So, you know, the platform of the Republican Party is a very good platform, but the problem is that the people that are currently in charge running the party are not following that platform and are not following the rules set up within the Republican Party. So the Republican Party is only as good as the members that are running it. Because we got to remember that it's not, you know, some mechanized machine. It's people that are in the party that are controlling the strings, pulling the levers, and doing everything with the party. So what? Even though I've been removed as a member, I still consider myself a Republican. I still consider myself a member of the Republican Party. And I'm encouraging people to join the Republican Party, because the only way that we're going to see the changes that we want to see happen is if there are people like us in the party making those changes. Because, again, the party is made up of the people that are in it, and it's going to steer the way that the people that are in it want it to be steered. So we really have to get in there and make the changes that we want to see happen.
Well, I'm also a little lost on a concept here, which, you know, I was watching this last election in 2012, and somehow Obama managed to get reelected. And, you know, I'm not really clear on all the details, but my understanding of how it worked is that Obama managed to get more votes than Mitt Romney did. And so how is encouraging you to leave the party
going to help the fact that they didn't have enough votes last time.
Yeah, and that was exactly my message that I took to the caucus. And unfortunately, the caucus was conveniently scheduled at a time that I had a pre-scheduled flight, so I was not able to be directly at the caucus. But which was what was really good is that I did have 16 other liberty activists there in my place to speak on my behalf. And the final vote to deny my membership ended up being 16 to 34. So while we don't have the numbers right now, this group of people that were there to support me, many of them very young activists just getting started out, are fired up and ready to get going. And pretty much everybody that was there became delegates to the state convention and are going to be moving on and moving our message up through that path. So basically my path forward is that I'm going to work on growing our groups, not only our local groups, but also our other county groups and our state group, until we have the numbers to make the changes that we want to see happen. And when that happens, I'll be glad to accept everyone who kicked me out is welcome in the Republican Party. The last thing I want to do is be kicking people out. But all we want to have happen is our ideas moved forward, and that's what we're going to be fighting for.
Well, that's an admirable goal. And unfortunately, the Republican Party itself doesn't have that goal. Their goal apparently is to start kicking people out of the party, which apparently is going to lead them to this wonderful success, because once they find that moderate middle, then all these people will start rushing to join the party, which is the most flawed bit of political logic I've ever heard in my life. But Karl Rove, political genius, seems to believe, and I don't know how he deludes himself into thinking that that's actually the case.
Yeah, and I agree with that 100%. The Republicans didn't lose in 2012 because of our ideas. We didn't lose because of our principles. You know, conservative ideas is where the future is at. We have the ideas that need to be moved forward. But as you just said, the elite and the mainstream media and the people running the Republican Party at the top right now seem to think that we need to sacrifice all of our principles and become more Democrat to be able to win, which exactly right is the exact opposite of what we need to be doing. The more you do that, the more you alienate the people that are in the party actually doing the work, and the less people you're going to have fighting for the candidates that we need to win. So,
yep.
You know, the real tactic that we need to be doing is exactly what they were removed me for, at least the people in Dunn County, is forcing these politicians to stand on principle and pulling them over to our conservative and Republican ideals that we were fighting for. And that's the way forward. I think if we can do that, the future looks bright, but you know, it's going to be a fight.
I agree, Todd. And I think the amazing thing is that you have to ask yourself, you know, are these people incompetent and stupid, or are they sinister? And frankly, either way, they're proposing a failed strategy that is not only going to cause losses for this party, but is also extremely devastating to conservatism and liberty. And we know for a fact that if this party, which, look, maybe, you know, other people have jumped ship and gone alternate party, and maybe that's where the future is. But right now, this party is the last bulwark against tyrannical statism. And it seems to currently be a ship that has sunk based on what they have done in the last 6 to 8 months. But it is a ship that's worth, you know, raising, and it requires the acceptance of people like you and me and Tex and anybody else who speaks about the Constitution and actually believes in the platform of this party. And speaking of such people, we've got Chuck joining us. Chuck, your mic is live if you'd like to join the conversation.
Hey, how you guys doing down there in Texas?
Pretty good. How are you?
I wish
Very
I was
good.
In Texas.
Very good. Yeah, I just listening in here, and I guess the point that I would want to make is, you know, I think that it's fine that we're going to have to fight for it, because, you know, I don't want to quit, and it makes me just all that much more dedicated to trying to hold their feet to the fire. You know, I was able to get the interview with Reince Priebus, and he told me, eye to eye, man to man, that the Republican Party would be fools not to welcome in the Liberty Movement. I'm not saying I believe him, but that's why I wanted to get him to say that, because now he said it. So is he a liar, or is he going to welcome us in? He said, you know, let's not close doors. Well, you, in your own state, Todd here has had a door slammed in his face. So
yeah, why don't you write Reince Priebus, Todd, and let him know, hey, you said we should embrace the movement. Look at this letter I just got, Reince. What are you going to do about that, huh? See what he says.
Yeah, I've had several people tell me that. I definitely will write him a letter, and you know, I don't necessarily expect a response, but we'll see what happens. You know, we got to remember too that while they tried to stifle the grassroots a little bit at the convention, the Republican Party is still set up quite a lot from the bottom up. I mean, you have to be a member of your county party to even be a member. So, I think the biggest problem is that, you know, there are several people at the top levels and throughout that are intentionally trying to stop people like us. But I think a lot of them are just misunderstanding and kind of stuck in the past, and they're listening to the wrong people. And if we can get our message out there and not go in there all angry and screaming, but go in there in a friendly way and tell them our ideas and why our ideas are going to win, I think they're ready to hear that. People don't want to hear that, well, we need to become more like Democrats to win. When I talk to people about we need to hold them to principles and we need to hold the candidates accountable and such, you know, they're all ears and they're ready to hear that. So I think people are starting to come around, but we need to keep pushing the message.
Well, and that's why I think what Chuck was saying is right, which is, look, this is a fight you should embrace because this thing's been brewing for a long time, right? It's been an uneasy alliance between the rhinos and the conservatives. And the rhinos don't like the conservatives, and the conservatives feel that the rhinos sell them out. So now we can actually have that contest. And the thing is, there's no victory in it for the rhinos. There's no way they can win because the base doesn't believe any of that stuff. And those are the people who show up to vote.
Exactly.
So,
and go ahead.
Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. Exactly. And that's the thing. They're sailing into the sunset, no matter what. And that's why I think one of the biggest things for people to do right now is to continue the fight. Priebus has said that in April we're going to move up the rules committee. We're going to vote on the rules and you know, address some of these issues. It's never been done before, and we really want to reach out. I've had a lot of conversations with Morton Blackwell. Obviously, it's a whole other conversation, but it's through the Rules Committee, you're only really going to address Rule 16, Rule 12, and Rule 40 will not be touched. But besides all that, what we can do is start to pressure your committee people. You need to be contacting them and contacting your committee man, your committee woman, your state chairman in the GOP, and every state across the country. Tell them about what's going on in Wisconsin. Also mention to them about the rules changes, and what if we can get some pressure built up and a buzz going about what's happened to Todd, what's happened up in Alaska, then it's going to force Priebus to respond. And shameless self promotion here, my website, I am looking for donations to get to the April meeting because I believe it'll be all the way out in Las Vegas, is constitutionalwar.org. But when I get out there, I'll find a way to get out there. When I get out there to Vegas, I'm going to ask Priebus again. I want another follow-up interview. And I want to ask, you know, talk to the people up there in Wisconsin. You know, show if we show up to these meetings, if you show up to the April meeting, they like that. Believe it or not, the grassroots from around the country, now not all of them do, I don't know the situation with the committee men and committee women and the chairman of Wisconsin. Maybe they don't like that idea. But a lot of these guys, the guys from Missouri, Utah, Iowa, obviously, Maine, around the country that I was able to talk to, and even the committee man in my own state, I was a guest of the committee woman from my state, Ada Fisher. And Mark Willis even mentioned David Lewis, our committee man, as being very cordial to him. So if we show up and we bring these issues up and we say, hey, look, we've got tons of people we are trying to bring into this party, and you're making us look like fools because you don't want them, okay? Show that you want them, and they might just come along and do all the things that money can't buy.
I think that's absolutely correct. I mean, look, to be realistic about it, now, Tex and Rex, you know, we're irreverent, but we're also relevant, so we're realists. And the fact is that the rules as they are right now and the actions of the party over the last 6 to 8 months have pretty much killed any grassroots voice. Now, I will agree that most of those committee people are just mindless drones that might be well-intentioned but are just going along with the top leadership. I don't believe that Priebus is sincere. I think that he can be forced
to
accept us, but I don't think that he's sincere. And as long as Karl Rove is kind of pulling his strings, I don't see how this is going to go that far. But that doesn't mean that it's not worth trying, because that's the only shot you got. You know, people keep talking, we need to start a third party. Well, look, there are several third parties already out there that are far more well-established than any third party that you start today will be in the next election or the next few. And it's difficult to make inroads because the rules favor duopoly. And as long as you have a duopoly, then we're going to have to, you know, take the ostensibly conservative party, at least on the national stage, and put it forward. So, you know, you have to applaud all these efforts and fire on all cylinders to make this happen. Now, did you say that the next the April rules meeting is likely to be in Nevada? Todd, I'm going to go ahead and mute your mic for a second because I'm getting some feedback from it, but you just stay on the line and I'll bring you back in shortly. Go ahead, Chuck.
Yes. Well, the buzz, I guess, going around, nothing is, it's just rumors that it's going to be in Nevada. And I know that it would be quite interesting considering what happened with James Smack and Mr. Priebus, obviously a whole nother show, but I'll hang around if you want to get into that. What I would point out, though, is one more thing. You know, obviously, when the founders started the revolution, they didn't just start out wanting to declare their independence from Great Britain. It started off fighting to keep their rights within that system. And that's the same thing that we're doing right now. We're fighting to keep our rights within the Republican Party, and when the Republican Party is when all options are exhausted, and they're, you know, the analogy would be, you know, in the revolution, they're killing our people. Well, when they're killing our people politically, like Todd, and if they're going to keep doing this across in Alaska, if they're going to do this, then, you know, as Patrick Henry would say, you know, if not now, when? But I would say, in the tradition of Captain John Paul Jones, you know, they're asking for our surrender. And in the spirit of John Paul Jones, I say, you know, I haven't yet begun to fight. And I think if we can go out there, wherever the April meeting is, if we can go there with big numbers, we need big numbers. Let's face it, folks. And, you know, you also, even if you don't want to hang out with these guys at the receptions, you know, it's like $180 for the 3 days to go to, like, their crappy dinners. And they are crappy. You're paying a lot of money for some crappy dinners. That's when these people start opening up. You know, they get a couple glasses of wine in them, and all of a sudden they want to be your best friend, and you're talking to them, and you get their ear. And some of the stuff they're clueless about, like you said. I mean, I won't go as far as you said, but they're not always the sharpest pencils. They don't know a lot about what we know about.
They're there for the social circle. They're not there for the principles, so they don't know what's going on with the rules. So it's like, oh, the party wanted to do that, so I supported it because I support the party, so I'm a good party member. But they don't know what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah, well,
that's part of the problem.
It is part of the problem, but it's also part of the reason that you got to show up to those dinners, because that's what they're there for. If you're at the spot where they're at, they're going there for that. So go there and say, okay, I'm here too. Let's talk. And tomorrow I want you to vote against everything and throw all these rules out. And I also want you to put pressure on Priebus and pressure on the people in Wisconsin to allow Todd to be a member of this party. And, you know, every state should be upset with what's happening to Todd. If we don't stand together, then
absolutely,
we have no strength. We have no strength without standing together. And I guess that's one of the things I would ask Todd is, you know, if the people up there are unanimous against him, or what is the grassroots situation up there? I know it's so different in every state.
Yeah, the grassroots up here is very good, very alive. We have a great group of liberty activists, liberty leaders that are fighting throughout the entire state. So, you know, and just because I was removed from the Dunn County Republican Party doesn't stop me from doing everything that I've been doing for the last 4 years or plus. And we have to remember that, you know, while there's been people fighting for liberty for as long as this country's been in existence, the current movement that I think we're talking about, the Tea Party and the Campaign for Liberty and other groups as such, have only been around for 4 to 5 years. So we're still growing. We're still coming into our own, and we have a lot of young people that are coming in. It's the group that I have here in Dunn County, like I said, that went in and fought for me. Majority of them were extremely young, you know, under 30 years old. I'm only 31 myself. So they're just getting into the party, just getting started, and they're excited and ready to go. And they're with us all the way, and we just have to keep pushing our message. And I think we will definitely gain the power that we need to have, or the numbers, I should say, that we need to have to be able to make the changes we want to see. We just need to keep encouraging everyone to get involved and do what they can on their local level.
Yeah,
well,
but
I
you
mean,
kids,
look,
with your long hair and your rock and roll, aren't you disruptive to the Republican Party?
Well, and that's the key. We got to make sure we're not. You know, you got to go in there and be professional. And actually, most of the young kids that come in are extremely polite and extremely you know, well-kept or whatever you want to say, and they do a great job representing the Liberty Movement and the Tea Party Movement. And, you know, it's just the rhinos, as we like to call them, are a minority in the party. They've just had the loudest voice, and that's the voice that people have been following. And
exactly,
our numbers are growing.
Money. They've had the most money. That's
exactly, that as well. But their numbers are shrinking, our numbers are growing, and our voice is getting louder. And as our voice gets louder, the Republican Party and the people in it are going to start shifting towards us, and I think they actually already are starting to.
Well, thanks for that, Todd. I'm going to throw it to my co-host, Tex. Obviously, you're kind of new to the show, but just we don't have too many rules here, but one of the rules is when I throw you a sarcastic question,
mm-hmm.
I expect a sarcastic answer. But other than that, there are no rules. So, to you, Tex.
All right, I'll keep that in mind for next time.
Yeah, but, you know, look, the thing is, what does the old guard have going for them? Well, they've got the money people locked up, okay? But you can't buy loyalty. That's the problem. Because they can buy the party. They can buy Karl Rove, and Karl Rove can promise to deliver them the party, but he didn't. He didn't deliver them the presidency, right, Mitt Romney. And the dirty little secret was nobody thought Mitt Romney would ever win the presidency, but he thought he'd be good for the Senate races. And this is why Karl Rove is so upset and founding the Karl Rove Conservative Kill Pack, which is that because of Murdoch and Aiken and these other people, he was not able to get the Senate, he believes, even though that there were all these rhinos that didn't make it either. But he blames the Tea Party for costing him the Senate. And so what he was telling the donors is, look, never mind Romney. He probably isn't going to win anyway. I don't think Karl Rove actually told Romney that. He was like, oh, yeah, you're totally going to win. Look at my freak out on Fox News. But he thought that they would pick up seats in the Senate, maybe get control of it. He didn't get any of that because it's all a big lie. It's a big fantasy that exists in Karl Rove's head. And so what we have is the support and the loyalty of the conservative voters, and the reality is the further the leadership gets away from its base of support, the less it is leadership. It's not leadership. It's just a small club of people sitting around talking. You know, that's what the Republican Party was for about 60 years, really. If you look at the congressional Republicans in the House, They never had power. They never had authority. And so they're sitting around just talking about things all the time, but never actually getting anything done. So, you know, if we have the support of the grassroots and the beauty of that, and the hearts and minds and the loyalty in terms of the principles that the party stands for of the average voter in America, and or the conservative voter in America, and if the Republican Party doesn't start standing for the principles it claims to believe in and stop this leftward lurch into, you know, what democratic dinitude, I guess I'd call it, if they don't stop that, then they're going to lose the base, and that's okay because the base is still going to be here. We still believe what we believe, and we'll just find a new party, you know? Everyone will just break up, and they'll just start voting for the candidates who believe most closely what they believe, and the GOP will go away.
Absolutely. I think, you know, that reminds me of the old battle cry from the campaign, the Ron Paul campaign, is you can't win without us. And the fact of the matter is the Republican Party needs Todd, me, you, and the rest of us more than we need them. But again, I go back to the analogy of the revolution and the revolution with inside the Republican Party. You know, again, look, there's probably is going to come a time that we're going to, I would say that we're probably going to lose this battle with the Republican Party. But we can lose that battle right now. Yeah, we can lose that battle right now and just give up. And then people will say, oh, you didn't try, you didn't this, you didn't that. Or we can fight that battle until every option has been exhausted, until we make most of the people that are in the Republican Party actually come our way. And G. Edward Griffin one time that said something very interesting I thought was just a classic story about the way things work. And he said, revolts never work. A revolt is where you grab your musket, you run out into the street, and you say, I'm as mad as hell, and you're easily mowed down. Revolutions are sometimes successful. A revolution is where there are people already within the system that decide that the system has become corrupt, and they want to change the system. I mean, most of the founding fathers...
Gorbachev.
Yeah, they're modern-day examples. Exactly. You know, you're going to have people that are within the Republican Party that are immediately ready to switch to a third party because if Karl Rove's going to run it, it's done. And that might be a good thing because, quite honestly, I hate the Republican Party as founded from the beginning. I'm not a fan of Abraham Lincoln. He was exactly like Barack Obama. So a different name would be great, you know, that's fine. But at the same time, I would much rather keep the Republican Party. I would much rather win this battle within the Republican Party, and I don't really care what the name of the team is. But if we got to go the other route, then we'll go the other route. I will be right there with you and right there with anybody else who's ready to go as soon as every option is exhausted. I still think there are just a couple more, you know, options that we can exhaust, and I think we should do it. I think it'll make us stronger.
Well, Chuck, I'll echo that comment because on the Tex and Rex show, we put this together to advance the cause of authentic conservatism, not republicanism. And the fact is that a true conservative who's standing on principle is going to support conservatism and conservative public servants wherever you find them, whether it's in the Constitution Party or even the Libertarian Party, and hopefully also in the Republican Party, since that's where the cash, the organization, and the brand recognition is. But, you know, it's about the principles, and I think it's very important. And also to write on what you said, you know, there are two kinds of revolutions. There's the violent revolution that seeks to change the core fundamental nature of society or government, and then there's the revolution within the form. And the left has been very good at enacting a revolution in the form that takes us down the wrong path. And if we look over the last 100 years, you can say that they've gradually and slowly, just like the boiling frog, been implementing that revolution. Frankly, one could actually say that in this country right now, we, despite the illegality of it per the Constitution, we have codified the 10 planks of Karl Marx's communist revolution. And is it too late? Well, no, it's not, because we can also have a revolution in the form. We don't have 100 years, but we can have a revolution in the form, meaning that the core principles and fundamental nature of our society and our governance are still there. And most people believe that that is the kind of the rubric that we're operating under, but effectively that's not the case, not within the Republican Party, certainly not within our federal government. But there is some light in some of the state governments, and I think that people have to realize that what we're talking about here is a revolution within the form by taking the fight, using all the levers of civilized power that are at our disposal to force the Republican Party to have, you know, be more conservative, just as a pragmatic manner of survival. I mean, you know, you have to look at it from a, you know, they keep talking about demographics. I'll throw it to you, Tex, in a minute, and then we'll see if we get some final comments from Todd. I know he's having some issues with his microphone. But, you know, they keep talking about demographics, meaning, you know, women, gays, Latinos, whatever. But the demographics are real simple. The old guard of the neocon rhino establishment country club right is old. And they are yesterday's Republican Party that's just holding on with the last dying breath to this. The new Republican Party looks a lot more like the old right, the right that was not isolationist but non-interventionist, the right that was for sound money, the right that was for limited governance and not income taxes but lower constitutional taxes. This is not the way the Republican Party has always been, and just like Chuck pointed out, you know, under Abraham Lincoln, the first thing that the Republican administration, the first Republican administration, just violated the Constitution all over the place, and the Republicans have done it many times since, but this Republican Party that we're dealing with is about 30 years old. Maybe you can take it back to the post-World War II era, but look at the Whigs. They came to prominence in 1833, were gone by 1860, replaced by the third party, the Republican Party. And just because the brand name hasn't changed of the opposition party, the Democrats, doesn't mean that this is the same party. And we can, or I should say we must, make this party that true conservative party again, whether it be through, you know, internal pressure, external pressure, or both. Tex, I'm going to throw it to you, and then we're going to see if we can get Todd on for some final comments. Go ahead.
Sure. Well, I mean, we're coming to a point where there's a divergence between the leadership and where the base is. And the thing is, what does the leadership have going for it? Well, it can get on television. Okay, well, that's all right, because the people who are closer to the Tea Party, they also get on television, too, because it gets viewership, right? And people want to hear their points of view. Now, they will put that person up, and then we'll have one of the rhinos come up and smack them down and say why what they said is wrong, but we have access to the media as well. So what does the quote leadership or the faux leadership have that we don't? Well, they have access to basically an unlimited source of money. Okay, so the sinews of war are unlimited money. But the thing is, people who have money, they invested in certain things, but they don't continue to invest in losing ventures. And if the rhino leadership can't deliver victory, which clearly they cannot, they have an astounding record of failure, then who's going to continue to invest in this thing? Unless it's people who are investing in its failure, meaning that they are on the other side and they don't want it to win. You know, so they're paying you off, or they're paying the consultants off in order to buy defeat for the Republican Party so that the Democrat Party can continue doing what it's doing. And how long can they continue to do that before people open their eyes and realize that's going on? Now, I'm not saying that's exactly what's going on, but what I'm saying is if it continues to fail, the money will dry up and the leadership will have nothing. And then there won't be a party structure. There will only be the conservatives and the liberty movement, and we'll take it over and it'll be ours.
Yeah.
And so it's a fight worth having.
It is, Tex. It is a fight worth having because, yeah, it would be ours. And, you know, the simple proposition for these middle managers who, you know, kind of play nice with the upper management, meaning Rove, Priebus, Boehner, and Sununu, and have concerns about those of us that run around and say things like nullification and constitution. The very simple fact is if you're going to win, which ostensibly under this current management, you're not winning, you're losing. I mean, Michael Steele brought huge victories in 2010, and you brought amazing defeats in 2012, and then the ship sank, and you didn't even rearrange the deck chairs, as my co-host said on one of our Mark Willis episodes. The simple fact is that even if you win, what have you won if the people that you have representing the party in office don't believe in the Constitution, don't believe in the platform, and basically operate exactly as the Democrats? What have you won? Nothing. And I think that that's the situation that, Todd, you faced up in Wisconsin. So you want to, you know, chime in, give us some final words, and if there's anything that people can do to help you, to highlight the way you've been treated, not, you know, so much for you specifically, but just to highlight how somebody who is active, who is grassroots, who can help get votes, is being treated by this party, then they're telling us that they don't want to win. What can we do?
Yeah,
to help?
Sure, absolutely. The you know, the future to me looks bright, as dim as it might be right now since I got removed from the party. The future looks very bright for myself and the Liberty Movement and everyone fighting within it. When people like Karl Rove and Reince Priebus and others at the top of the current, what we call the elite or rhinos, are really starting to lash out, and you can tell they're getting worried because they see us coming and they're not sure how to stop us. So they're trying to do whatever they can. And I really believe they're going to fail. We're going to succeed, and the party's going to move in our direction. You know, I usually consider myself a constitutional, conservative, libertarian, Republican, if you want to put a name on it. So the Republican Party is the vehicle and the party that the principles fit with myself the most and the ones that I'm going to be using going forward. So I really want to encourage everyone to get involved in their local Republican Party. You just have to join the county Republican Party. You know, in Dunn County, it's $15. Some of them are $25. If you're a student, it's like $7.50 here in Dunn County. So it's not that big of a financial burden. But you can make a lot of difference just by getting involved, because the Republican Party is really the members that make it what it is. So if we're the majority, if the Liberty Movement and Constitutional Conservatives, Tea Party, are the majority, we're going to have the say. And they see that coming, they see us coming, and they're getting scared going forward. They're going to be doing a lot of stuff to try to stop us, but we're just going to keep coming. So I'd really encourage everybody to join their local party. Join the Campaign for Liberty. I got going in this 4 years ago, and it's been a great organization to work with, and a great they provide a lot of great tools to get you started and get going. So if you want to go to campaignforliberty.org, campaignforliberty.org, you can sign up there, join the mailing list, and start hearing what they're doing in your state. We have great state coordinators throughout the entire country, so I'm sure there's something going on no matter where you are, in Wisconsin, Texas, Minnesota, or wherever. So definitely get involved. However it is, just get involved and keep moving the message forward. That's what we have to do. But thank you guys for having me on. It's been great.
Well, absolutely. Great. Well, thanks for dialing in. You're welcome to call in anytime.
Have a good night.
Yeah, thanks, Todd. And just remember, you know, we don't do interviews, but anytime you want to chime in, you got something to put forward for the cause of liberty and authentic conservatism, we are usually on the air, and this is for everybody's benefit, 10 p.m. Eastern on Sunday evenings. And sometimes we change it up. Obviously, today's Monday, but we didn't want to interfere with the Beyonce Bowl yesterday. Whoops, did I say that? So we're here tonight, and if you like our Facebook page, that's the Tex and Rex Show on Facebook, you will get, in your newsfeed, you will get notifications of when we're broadcasting that you can share with your friends, and you can always download the show in archives if you missed it. So thanks a lot, Todd. Good luck to you, and keep us posted on your progress up there in Wisconsin.
Will do. Thank you.
Thanks, Todd.
All right. That was interesting information. What you're hearing is, you know, what's going on the ground, okay? And it's wonderful to hear it on the radio, like we're broadcasting here, or see it in a post on Facebook or whatnot. But the very simple fact is that if you're not doing something other than listening or posting, then you're really a spectator, maybe an active spectator, but a spectator nonetheless. If conservatism is going to reign supreme in this country again and restore the Constitution, liberty, federalism, limited government, and help change our culture back to the traditional values that we've espoused without repeating the errors of our past, then you've got to be more active than that. And that means that not only share the information, because that's wonderful, on Facebook or Blog Talk Radio, you can always download our show in MP3 just by right-clicking the download link before below the show graphics and email it to somebody or burn it on CD and give it to somebody. But you've got to do something. And the important things to do is get educated and inform other people, because as Ron Paul said, the intellectual revolution can't be stopped by party shenanigans. And the intellectual revolution has to occur first. You have to understand the Constitution. You have to understand basic economics and what the difference between corporatism and capitalism is, what the difference between Keynesianism and Austrian economics is, and look at the history and understand that the Second Amendment is not about deer hunting. It is about protecting us from tyranny. It is the teeth to the Constitution. It is the teeth of the Ninth and Tenth Amendment. Without that Second Amendment, you've got nothing. So these are important things to know, and then take action. And that action might be to call Congress people, senators, when there's an acute issue or a legislative action that needs to be looked at. If you're inclined, join the Republican Party. If you're already a member, go to the meetings. If you feel like supporting a third party and you think that's the better way to go, that's fine too. The fact is that you have to promote conservatism wherever you can find it, and that is different for each and every one of us because we all live in different areas. In your locality, the Republican Party might have a lock on things. Great. Get in there and teach them about conservatism. If they don't have a lock on it, and it seems to be the Democrats have a lock, then maybe it's time for you to take a party that will actually defeat that lock of the Democrats by going with the Constitution Party or the Libertarian Party, whoever has the better structure in your locality. Because the important thing is that alternate parties can affect change on the state level. But for now, on the national stage, it is the GOP. And next election, even though you'll probably have five or six legitimate and viable candidates for president in 2016, it's going to be another duopoly election. The Democrats are probably going to run somebody like Hillary Clinton. And the Rhinos want to run somebody like Jeb Bush because they think this is a friggin' monarchy. Okay, you don't inherit the office of president, you morons.
They want to run Jeb Bush. I mean, that is
yeah,
totally
they want
bizarre.
To. Right.
And they more than want to. I imagine come 2014, all of a sudden this guy is going to start peeing in the news all the freaking time. Anyway.
Yeah, Tex, I agree. But obviously the Tea Party, because I keep always hearing him, Tea Party favorite, Rand Paul, the Liberty Movement, the Campaign for Liberty, would like to see somebody like Rand Paul, or actually probably exactly Rand Paul, running. Well, under these rules, that's never likely to happen. However, you have to advocate for that. Now, don't jump the shark and go to 2016 when we've got elections this year. In Virginia and New Jersey, we've got them this year. There's going to be a special election in massive poop shoot where that MITBOT came from because John Kerry was just made our chief diplomat, baffling as that is. He's now the Secretary of State, so there's a vacant Senate seat. Now, here's the thing. Some people have been coming down hard on Rand Paul for voting for John Kerry. Well, before you jump and get all emotional about these things, you got to think a little more pragmatically. Number one, John Kerry was probably going to get that nomination anyway, so why should Rand Paul fight that battle when there are better battles for him to fight in places where he's been standing on principle and hasn't caved? Second of all, did you ever think that maybe Rand Paul voted for John Kerry just to get that asshole out of the Senate so he wouldn't have to work with him anymore? So don't think that Rand Paul has capitulated because he's made a pragmatic move. You've got to support them wherever you can find them. It's a very important thing to do. It's very important to get active, and don't be overwhelmed. It's not that hard. You don't have to do that much. Just do a little bit every day, inform a few people every day, How often do does the Republican Party have these meetings? Not that often. Go to the meetings. Tell them what you think. In some places, you can go as a guest. In other places, you have to register, join the party. Whatever the rules are, you need to make it heard that if this party wants to grow, no matter what Karl Rove does, no matter how much money he raises, if he can't get voters to turn out, they won't win anything. And if that's the intention, then, hey, you know what, so be it. If they want to crash and burn the Republican Party, then that's fine, because conservatives will find
they're already
to take its place.
Spectacularly.
Yeah.
You can't argue with success like that.
Yeah. You know, it's that Romney bought 5,000 text. It's just a spectacular failure. You know? So don't fear that, oh, my God, it's all over. Don't run around, you know, and put your head
in
the sand.
This can't be happening, man. This isn't happening.
Well, it's happening. It's happened already, okay? So what are you going to do? Sit back and bitch and, you know, pick up your whiskey glass and say, you know, I was somebody once. I could have been a contender. You know, that's not the case. Do something for the cause of conservatism, whatever works in your area. That's my two cents. I'll throw it back to you, Tex, and then if Chuck wants to chime in.
Well,
if anybody else wants
to
call in, by the way, sorry. If anybody else wants to call in, we've got about a half hour show left. 646-649-1013 to you, Tex.
Coalition of Freedom, I'm looking at you. But, yeah, absolutely. Look, the fight's not over. This thing goes on. I mean, this party has been around for over 100 years. You know, it's going to be around for a lot longer than that, maybe. But the fight will go on whether this party is still around or not. But the fact is the principles that the party stands for will continue because they're the founding principles of America. And they're what Americans actually believe. And so those aren't going to go away. The thing is you have to find a vessel, the proper vessel, to house them in. And right now the Republican Party is doing everything that it can to tell those principles to get out. We don't stand for those anymore. We're about Keynesianism, and we're about getting ours and, you know, squeezing as much blood from a stone as we can get out of Washington, the stone being you, and the blood being, you know, what they're sucking on up there in Washington to keep themselves going. So they don't want to change, but they're going to have to, and they will have to because of the actions of individuals and individual voters and citizens across the country. If those people wake up and they stop blindly following this leadership. Because at this point, after anybody who lived under Reagan, anybody who remembers the party under Newt Gingrich, anybody who's heard what Ron Paul is talking about with, you know, returning back to constitutional government and the rule of law, this rhinoism is not going to appeal. And this rhinoism is just going off a cliff. And if you can get people to realize they don't like this, they know they don't like it, they just don't know why, right? And they've been taught, well, I don't trust, you know, Ron Paul. I don't trust liberty. That's really what they say. I don't trust my own freedom. Oh, okay.
I don't want other. I'm for freedom as long as I'm the one who decides what that is.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I don't trust individual liberty. That sounds crazy to me, even though the country was founded on that. People ran around town, walking around carrying shotguns all day, you know, whistling while they, you know, as you and I were saying on the phone the other day, Rex, you know, the deal is, you know, what's the difference between open carry and constitutional carry? Well, constitutional carry is you walk around with a gun. Like, hey, I got a gun. I don't know. I just strolled in from the woods, shot myself a raccoon, made a hat out of the thing I'm wearing right now, and now I need to go pick up some, hummus and kumquats and some beaver meat here at this store. Like, hey, you can't come to the store unless you check your weapon. Okay, I check my weapon, and I go in the store. And that's it. And then when I come out, pick up my gun, I just walk down the street, you know. But that's how it used to be in this country. And you know what? It was fine. Everything was okay, you know, because that's just the way it was. But now everybody has all these suspicions and all these fears bred into them by media and all this other kind of stuff. But the Rhino Party's not going anywhere. It's dead in the water. And, you know, there's blood in the water with this thing. With the Romney loss, these guys are really concerned. And that's why they're forming a new pack, the Karl Rove Conservative Kill Pack, because they're that concerned. And they have to stop the grassroots from having influence in the party, because that's the last thing they can tolerate. Because if the grassroots has influence, Karl Rove knows that his brand of conservatism is not popular and not wanted.
Well, it's the exact same thing that happened back in 1960. And It's a very similar story, you know. Ron Paul didn't win, and neither did Barry Goldwater. But I'll read something to you real quick here from Jack Hunter's speech at the Sun Dome over the summer in August. He, part of his speech goes into, many in the Republican establishment continue to dismiss our movement as a bunch of Ron Paul kids, as if the massive youth support of Dr. Paul somehow means we're not serious. This is not the first time the Republican establishment has made this mistake. Consider the following from a 1960 editorial in the National Review. And I'll just say, I'm not a big Buckley fan, but this was from the National Review, and it explained Goldwater. Describing the youth presence for Barry Goldwater at the National Republican Convention that year, youth was everywhere at the Republican Convention. Youth managed the various candidates' booths, waved the signs, held the posters, even held a parade for the convention. Lots of young people had no ideological interest, and they had come because their parents were there. But those who were the most serious were the ones and hardest working for the Republican Party in the future were conservatives, most of them Goldwater fans. They passed out 15,000 buttons for Goldwater, handed out literature, rallied inside and outside the amphitheater. They greeted Nixon at the airport with Goldwater signs and did the same thing for President Eisenhower the next day. Sound familiar? The National Review editorial then noted they drove one Nixon aide into muttering in exasperation, "Those damn Goldwater people are everywhere." The editorial then concluded of these Goldwater youth that such fiery young conservatives and libertarians represent those who are serious and ones who will be working the hardest to guide the Republican Party in the future. It would be, I'll go away from what Jack's saying for a second, but wouldn't it be great if the National Review was saying that today about the Ron Paul folks? Maybe we can work on them. I'm not sure. So he goes he goes on to say, of course, the National Review was right. Those damn Goldwater people became the modern American conservative movement. And it's those damn Ron Paul people who are picking up where Barry Goldwater left off, who are reviving the philosophy of liberty, and who are championing the constitutional principles of our founders that made this country once great. Whereas Jim DeMint said in January of 2012, if Republicans don't understand the important aspects of what Ron Paul is saying, we won't be able to exist as a party, certainly not a majority party. And for those who don't know, Jim DeMint is now at the head of the Heritage Foundation. We have allies. We are winning. We are changing the party. We've already changed the party. So to give up now after we've accomplished so much, I think is foolish. To say that we're going to just become part of the party and capitulate to whatever Priebus and Boehner and all these other folks want, I think that's treason. There's got to be a middle ground there where, you know, maybe we will leave the party. But as Goldwater led to Reagan, and obviously there's issues with Reagan's presidency, hopefully it won't take that long for us. But after Goldwater, we've seen a lot, you know, we had Nixon, Ford, Reagan. Obviously, it started getting worse with Reagan and later on in his presidency and then into the George H.W. presidency. But that's a long line of Republican power, and it all came from the grassroots, the Goldwater people, the Ron Paul people of the 60s.
Yep. That's very true, and I think that the thing that people have to realize is, you know, you're always, in any organization, which is why we need multiple parties and more competition, you're always going to face animal farm syndrome. You know, all animals are equal, but some are more equal than others. Or, you know, four legs good, two legs bad. Well, except when we get in the house, two legs are okay. That's always the case, and you always have organizational decline until you're able to revitalize it with some new blood. And that's kind of what we're facing right now. And speaking of organizational structures, we've got somebody who knows quite a little bit about organizational structures. I'm bringing him in right now with his theme.
Conan, what is best in life? To crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and to hear the lamentation of your women.
That is good. That is good.
Conan,
yep.
You're live.
Hey, everybody. How you doing? Good conversation.
Welcome to the show, Trog.
Yeah, well, you tagged me. I heard you. So I figured I'd call in. And I really would like to get my hands on that article. I was doing a search on it, trying to find the article that you were reading out of. I would like to have that.
You're talking about Chuck's article?
Yeah, I'd like to process that through my own mind and do some research about that era, because I think that something, you know, you said something earlier, Rex, about, you know, 30 years, the party as it is now. But I see this as all the way back to the Rockefeller-Goldwater battle. And you know, there may be you know what I'm saying, there may be milestones along the way, but this article that he was talking about, you know, that's before, I mean, I was a child, you know, in that era, so I wasn't that
aware.
I'm still
aware a child.
Yeah, well, immature is different than being a child, but...
Oh, okay.
but, you know, I'd like to actually do some research on that, because there was also something else that happened in that era. You know, we had the hippie movement. We had a revolution. We had people that were breaking the bonds, and this is a study that I'm still working on. You know, I come from, you know, my dad was a Korean War vet, so it'd be, you know, Korean War, Second World War. Everybody was really ultra conservative and very formal and very stiff. And coming out of that, you know, out of that era, you know, we had the explosion, the Cultural Revolution. And I think that the people in the Republican Party, just like they are now, were freaking the heck out at all these wild, crazy young people who didn't look like them. They were starting to grow their hair out and dress funny and full of piss and vinegar and energy. And, you know, I don't think my parents' generation knew what that was about. You know, my dad grew up in a whole different era and went off to the Korean War at 18 years old. And I think they were always kind of old and crusty, if that makes sense what I'm saying. And this generation just freaked them the hell out, just like the Ron Paul movement has freaked them out again. But here's the thing that I want to research is, did they change the rules and screw the grassroots to a point where, like in Alaska, because I'm, you know, half my life in Alaska, the guy gets booted. And then the gentleman, I don't know if it was the guy that's still on or the guy who was on earlier, you know, like they kick him out of a party. I mean, how can you move forward? And you know, people talk about, well, get involved and go down and make some noise. Well, the people that are making the noise are getting kicked out and they're getting knocked off committees. And so where is that transition point? How do you overcome that? You know, they got
well,
to let you
the
in
transition
door.
Point is with people getting involved and not staying at home. They have to show up to these meetings and make sure that this stuff doesn't happen. They have to get involved and write the elected officials. And realistically, look, they have to start becoming the elected people. They have to start standing for the offices themselves, like Mark
sure.
Willis did. You know, they have to become the leadership, because cajoling somebody who doesn't believe in the principles that you believe is never going to be as effective as having somebody there who actually believes these things. And so at a certain point, people have to become the leadership.
Okay,
the
well, how
leadership.
Many – well, and I'm not trying to counter you, Tex, at all. I'm just trying to get a grasp on that, because didn't the Ron Paul movement spend 8 years getting into leadership positions? I'm trying to get a handle on that, because you can never get clear information.
And look what happened. They took over the Republican Party of several states this time. And they had enough delegates at Tampa that, you know, the rhinos had to shut the lights out and on Monday and try to figure out, what the hell are we going to do? There's all these Ron Paul people here. And
right.
nobody likes Mitt Romney. I mean, that's how close they came. And then they're like, oh, well, we didn't win, so let's all go home. Well, no, I mean, think about it. Next time, how old are the people who were supporting Romney in 4 years? Are there going to be more of them or less of them? In 4 years, they're going to be more of us or less of us. That's what you got to ask yourself. It's basic mathematics. It's the future of the party. They'll either embrace it or they'll die.
But either way,
that's reality.
Either way, we win, because whether, you know, they embrace it and grow, and conservatism rises, and there's the calls of liberty is resounding in
the halls of the state houses and the federal houses again, or they stagnate, wither, die, and leave a vacuum for alternate parties to rise up and grab that mantle of the opposition to the Democrats.
Well, the party's not refreshing the blood and not bringing along the new generation, and it's actively chasing them away. That's a dead organization. I don't care how much money you have.
Yeah, it's insane.
Yeah.
You don't have
it's
anybody.
It's severely in need of dialysis.
And what's Carl Rove doing?
Blood bag.
Has anybody gone done more follow up on this Carl Rove situation? You know, because I just heard about it a couple days ago, and I haven't had time to dive into it. But
we just started on that, Chris. And the interesting thing is that Carl Rove managed to do something with this, as Tex calls it, the conservative kill pack, that he was not able to do with all the money he spent on Orca technology with 2012. Carl Rove was trending on Twitter for about a couple hours. So, you know, he got the technology thing down. All he has to do is just create controversy by being himself, and it'll trend on Twitter. And it was trending with everybody just basically blasting this douchebag for basically doubling down on his, you know, conservative assassination coup. It's failed. Look, they've already lost. I mean, the only question is, you know, is there a way to raise the USS GOP, or is it going to stay at the bottom of the ocean? But they've already lost. They've already killed it. You know, there's a couple of ballast tanks left, and, you know, you should fire them before you jump on a lifeboat, I guess. So, you know, fire away. And speaking of that, we've got about 18 minutes of show left, and I've got another caller that wants to come in. So to
can
keep
you real
things
quick
in order,
before...
Let me throw it to Chuck for his final thoughts, and since he's been on for a while, and then you can chime in, Chris. So let's send it to you, Chuck, for some final thoughts, and thank you for helping us get Todd on the show. That was a great guest. So go ahead to you, Chuck.
Yeah, not a problem. Absolutely. Thank you for having me on, and Todd. And I guess that's what I would encourage everybody. Please, same thing Todd's saying. I'll make it a little bit easier for you to understand, because I know a lot of people, well, a little bit easier for some people who might be listening to understand, because I know how a lot of people feel. They just want to give up on the Republican Party. I'll give you a couple reasons why not to. First of all, don't go out without a fight. I mean, if you're going to give up, at least go give up after, you've exhausted all your options. Make a tyrant look like a tyrant. Second of all, it does cost money to do these things. If you have deep pockets, invest in some of these PACs. I'll shameless plug myself, constitutionalwar.org. Don't just go there to donate. Check out what I'm doing. Share my videos. If you can donate, that's great. I want to attend the April meeting. If you can attend the April meeting, go to the April meeting. Attend your conventions. The convention season's coming up. You guys were mentioning there's a couple races, a couple big races going on in 2013, but there's even more important races going on in 2013, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Here in the state of North Carolina, we'll be electing a new chairman. We'll be electing a lot of the district and county chairmen. It's so simple to get involved, where you go to your precinct meeting, your county, your district, and then your state convention. Even if you can't make it to the single location in your state convention, say you're in a big state like Texas, and you're on one side and the convention this year is going to be on the other side, you can still go to your precinct, you can still go to your county and your district. That's not going to require you traveling much more than, 20, 30 minutes, maybe an hour in some cases. You can really have an effect on your local politics. Stay local. I mean, if you can't go big, stay local. And the money aspect, the aspect of what do we do? Just quit now. They've got too much money. They're a machine. I'll leave you guys with one quote here from Sam Adams. If he loves wealth greater than liberty, the tranquility of servitude greater than emanating contest for freedom, go home from us in peace. We seek not your counsel nor your arms. Crouch down and lick the hand that feeds you, and may posterity forget that you are our countrymen.
Hear, hear. All right, Chuck. Well, appreciate that, and certainly good points made. Thank you for joining us, and we'll be back on the air 10 p.m. Eastern next Sunday, and hope to hear from you.
Very good, man. Thank you for having me.
All right, thanks, Chuck. All right, Chris, I'm going to throw it back to you, and then we have another.
Well, I just wanted
sort of
sorry,
regular on
Rex. Yeah, no problem. I just wanted him to give me that URL to that article before he left. That was all I wanted.
Oh,
he's
going to get it to me. I'll get it to you.
Okay, all right. Because I want to do some read. I'm actually reading some stuff right now as we're talking. So bring on the
phone. Chuck said that he's gonna send that to me. And Tex, you got anything you want to add before I bring on our next guest for the last 15 minutes of show?
Fuck Carl Rove. Yeah, go ahead and bring on that other caller.
Ditto. Twice. All right.
No, thank you.
Kelly Mordecai, Hidden Fourth Branch, you are live with Tex and Rex and Frog.
Oh, hey, guys. Rex and I have been bantering a little bit today on the discussion of gun control versus the definition of victim disarmament. That was quite fun. I want to tell you guys kind of where I'm headed politically. I'm a registered libertarian, okay? I totally love the Constitution and any other people in other parties, third parties, or Republicans. If they love the Constitution, I will work with them and sometimes for them. However, you know, rhinos, I'm just sorry, they've got serious problems. I could spend all night about the problems. There's a couple things I want to do in the Libertarian Party, which I think can cause change possibly in the Republican Party by competition. I want to call it competition. One of the first things I want to do is introduce that social issues belong in the hands of the states. It's a state sovereignty issue. Every time we give more power to the federal government, it just gets worse and worse, and they mess it up anyway. So I want to have a party platform, and I think we're going to get there, already getting a lot of support within the Libertarian Party. Secondly, in the rules, we have in-house accountability systems. Oh, my gosh, we can monitor our own party? Yes, that's what I'm proposing. Now, to get these passed at the national level, it might very well attract an awful lot of people, Republicans and Democrats, into a party that understands, oh, goodness, states are sovereign. Oh, goodness, we keep going to the feds, it gets bigger. Oh, goodness, this party actually has integrity? Oh, my gosh. Well, through competition, if you will, what I'm hoping to see happen is that the Republicans might actually adopt these principles. And we'll just see what happens. But obviously, something needs to happen. And I'm tired of these arguments. Well, third parties, they never win. Oh, tell that to Abraham Lincoln. You know, they were a third party. Well, you're going to take votes from Republicans. Yes, we are. We're also going to take votes from Democrats. But if, you know, you can still vote in the general election. Look, you can vote for anybody you want, whatever party. Still work for the libertarians in the primaries, bantered out with other parties. But when we realize we have a common thread of the Constitution, when we realize these political parties are just a vehicle for the end goal, we might be able to actually hook up and beat some rhinos and beat some Democrats. So that's kind of where I'm headed, guys.
Well, that's look, that's great, Kelly. And like I said before, I think you're right. I mean, it's liberty, it's the Constitution, authentic conservatism, and that's going to be determined locally by your environment and also by your talents and your dispositions. So for some people who don't necessarily have your talents and don't live in your locality, maybe the Republican Party, their local Republican Party is the place to go. I mean, there are certain pockets in Texas where, you know, it's only Republican, and they're actually conservatives. In other places, especially up the Northeast, there's hardly any Republicans, and any Republican pockets are generally, you know, rhinos. So maybe there you want to
Which
look
is
at the
funny
Libertarian
because
Party.
That's where the home of the Republican Party was originally. Anyway,
exactly. Well, and again, it's because it's not the same Republican Party. I think people have to understand something. This party's had a long run, and same with the Democrats. Neither one of them any way, shape, or form resembles who they started out as and who they've moved towards. Remember, at one point, the Democrats were the sound money party and the Republicans were the fiat money party. Then they reversed, and then they both dropped it. So, you know, don't get confused with, you know, I know the Republicans trot this crap out all the time, especially when they accuse it of being too old, too white, too male. You know, we're the party of Abraham Lincoln who emancipated the slaves. Well, first of all, he didn't. And second of all, no, you're not the party of Lincoln. You've permutated through, you know, so many different changes that you're not that party anymore. And then, of course, now lately it's, you know, St. Reagan. We're the party of Reagan. No, you're not. Ronald Reagan could not get the nomination in your party today. He's too extreme. He's too conservative. He's too controversial. Remember,
well,
at that time,
he could barely get the nomination back then either. I mean,
exactly.
Let's be honest about it.
And back then it was because his foreign policy was crazy. We wanted to contain the Soviets, and Reagan wanted to defeat the Soviets.
Roll
so,
back.
You know, it's happened before. Now, in all reality, what Kelly just said is spot on because, you know, alternate parties do have a chance when you actually support them because they believe in the principles that they purport to state, whereby the Republicans are clearly completely contradictory to their stated principles. This ship has already sunk, but it is worth raising.
Well, let me throw out some more points here, okay? So the Republicans and the Democrats claim all these social issues. Of course, the Democrats are welfare. On the other side, you got the Republicans saying, we're anti-abortion, we're pro-life. You know, Rick Santorum gets in a pickup truck, drives through Iowa, wins the Iowa caucus, or supposedly the media said he did. Meanwhile, these jokers get elected on social issues the federal government has no business in, doesn't have much effect. And let's see, while they got elected on these social issues, they pass the things like Patriot Act, NDAA, the bank bailout, yada, yada, yada. It's like, come on, who's paying attention here? And that's the biggest, one of the biggest tricks that the Republicans and Democrats have is these stupid social issues, and it sucks people in. It sucks people in like crazy. We take that out of their hands by putting it in the hands of the states. It's going to be kind of turn on their head. They won't know what to do. It's like, we don't care if you believe in abortion or not or pro-life. It's up to the states. If we get there in, say, a couple election cycles, they're going to look pretty silly. I mean, it's
well, there's not Article 1, Section 8. Why is it a federal issue? That's the question. That's what the 10th Amendment is about. Article 1, Section 8 laid out specific enumerated powers. But the Founding Fathers, they did this foolish thing in hindsight where they wrote their rationale into the document. And so they said, well, because you need to provide for the general welfare, comma, you have these enumerated powers. And what Congress has done is they have decided that, oh, we'll use the rationale, well, I'm trying to provide for the general welfare, therefore I can do whatever I want. Well, that's not the case. And actually, when the Tea Party came into power in Congress, they enacted a rule that every time you propose some legislation, you have to cite the constitutional authority to do it. And so someone was talking about regulating something that was going on Indian lands. Don't know what it was. Might have been oil drilling or something like that. I think that was the case, but could be wrong. And he cited, Congress shall have the power to regulate the land. But the full phrase is, Congress shall have the power to regulate the land and sea forces. So basically, he just completely quoted the Constitution out of context in order to pretend that he had constitutional authority to do what he wanted to do.
Well, they also do the stupid commerce clause.
Kelly, hold on.
The overreach.
Hold on just a second. Before you get into the complicated commerce clause and the good and plenty clause and whatever else we got there, real quick, we're down to the last 5 minutes of on-air broadcast. So if I can't bring in any more callers because we are trying to wrap this up, but if you want to listen to the archive live, then you need to call in right now. You got 5 minutes, 646-649-1013. That's 646-649-1013. I won't be able to bring in any more callers, but you can listen. For the rest of you, you can always catch us in archives by going to the Tex and Rex Show page on Blog Talk Radio, and you can also find the links on our Facebook page, the Tex and Rex Show. Kelly, back to you, and then we'll go to Chris, and then we'll start wrapping up our final thoughts because I don't want to spend an hour in overtime. Go.
Okay. 1776, 13 colonies became states. 1788, they created the present form of our federal government, the Constitution. We have enemies, okay? We've got jihadists, Muslims. We've got leftist socialists that would love to have centralized power and destroy us. That's where states' rights come in.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the purpose of the Constitution, was to limit the powers of the federal government. They needed a stronger one, but they wanted to limit what it could do. Because if they created a stronger government than what they had on the Articles of Confederation, which is way too weak, they would have a government that continually fed upon itself and increasingly took over more and more power. And the reality is, they managed to slow that down for several hundred years, but the natural progression of power is to grow. And we've reached a point where it has jumped bounds, and it will do whatever the people will tolerate now. And the people, not knowing anything about their founding documents or what the country is really about, or about the principles of liberty, or the dangers of government, which really is the problem. It's not whether they know the principles of liberty or anything. You only understand the value of liberty if you understand the dangers of government. They're willing to just transfer everything over because, well, the government will do everything right because it's not one of these big corporations. They're just after profit. And, you know, the government exists apart from everything. They sit on top of the mountain with the burning bush, and they have this tete-a-tete, and they always do what's wise and just, and they're never wrong in any way whatsoever because they can see beyond profit and all this kind of stuff. Well, go look at history. Governments don't work that way at all. Governments are the most corrupt institution. Period, hands down. Governments rule the day in corruption. So, you know, you want to turn everything over to them. Yeah, it seems hunky-dory right now, but, you know, it doesn't turn out that way. I'll just tell you that right now. And you get to a certain point, and, you know, you're through the looking glass, and there's no going back.
Yep. And, Tex, to your point, these big mega corporations that the left hates so much, and they use those to as a stick to beat capitalism, free market capitalism with. Those big corporations can't exist without the massive power of government, because the most difficult thing to maintain once you achieve it is to be the top of your industry or your top of your game. I mean, let's face it. The Ravens were created out of, you know, the NFL expansion some years back, and they won the Super Bowl. Have they won it since until last night? So, you know, one of the most difficult places to be is the king of the hill, because everybody's gunning for you. So what these corporations do is, once they become the king of the hill, they use that influence and that power to get regulations from government that secure that position on their behalf, which caters to the lowest common denominator. It reduces the value to the consumer, and it basically forces the lowest and the worst, as opposed to the highest and the best, which is what free markets do. And what people don't understand is they look around and they see the comforts that they have, and they think that this happened because of government regulation, because of the Federal Reserve. What we don't realize is that these wonderful things that we have in this country that we shared with the world occurred despite the government and despite the Federal Reserve. And the only thing you have to ask yourself is, what more could we have achieved in the last century if we had the government of Jefferson and Madison and there was no central bank?
Absolutely. I mean, look at the amount of progress that you had. You know, look at the country in 1776, where the world was technologically, right? And then look, you unleash the will of the people to do what's in their own best interest, to serve the greater good, right? So by serving their own self-interest, they serve the greater good. And look at the amount of progress that you had. In 100 years, you had a massive amount of innovation, a massive amount of creativity, and you changed, you know, the entire world. I mean, look at the difference between 500 years prior, so 1776, you go 500 years back, 1276. What really was different? Yeah, what really was different about people's lives back then? Not much. You know, now they have gunpowder. Okay, so it's a different way to kill your neighbor than you had before. Okay, so before you had swords, now you have gunpowder, but you still had swords, right? And you're still riding around on horses. It wasn't all that different, and that pretty much was
the extent of the difference. Well, and you had pepper on the table. So now you had pepper and you had
actually
pork.
Kelly here, there were some changes in 1276. If you go into overtime, I'll tell you about them. They were pretty amazing that led to our Constitution.
Well, the Magna Carta.
We're already in overtime. Well, no, I mean, I agree with Kelly. I mean, the High Middle Ages were definitely an era of significant progress in the Western world, at least. But just to be clear, we've managed to advance, technologically speaking and utilitarian-wise, far faster in a shorter period of time than we had up to the High Middle Ages and even since then, even through the Renaissance. But I think one of the things you can point out is that we had a whole different moral and cultural basis back then. I would argue that the founding fathers in 1776, despite their liberal, look it up what it meant at the time, liberal attitude at the time, were fairly traditional, similar to where we were in the High Middle Ages, not quite, but similar to it. Where we've fallen since then is to kind of abandon 2,000 years of civilizational tradition. But I think, to Texas' point, you know, since 1776, we've managed to, you know, unleash human potential in a utilitarian manner because of liberty.
Well, let me throw something out about technology, by the way. I filed a couple patents. And why was they motivated? Because, my gosh, if these work and everything else, I can make a lot of money, self-interest. Of course, you know, Bill Gates, Microsoft, all that stuff, all these, you know, Ford, the automobile innovations. Well, we set up this thing in the Constitution that you are allowed to have the exclusive right of your intellectual property, a patent, for 20 years. That is an amazing motivator to develop technology. Now, in addition to that, we had a Constitution. What does that mean? You get to keep what you work for. You know, 100 years, 200, 1,000 years before that, if you weren't wealthy, you didn't own lands, you would basically work for someone else. The right to live on land, and, you know, I'm quoting Braveheart here, you know, if one of the nobles said, if Robert the Bruce said, well, they don't fight, I kick them off my lands. In other words, you want to go to war, you got to kick people off the lands, or they're going to go to war with you. Well, that's not a strong army. That's like fight or be homeless, you know. So our Constitution was set up that you keep what you work for, you're rewarded for your work. And, of course, we have justice as well. So we got a lot of elements here. Oh, and here's another factor, too. Thomas Jefferson, okay? He walked into the patent office one day and says, hey, I got this idea. It's called interchangeable parts. And they laughed him out of the patent office. They laughed him out because everything was made by hand. It's amazing we won the Revolutionary War because all these handmade guns, they weren't very reliable. There's American Rifleman talks about that. But he came up with the idea of interchangeable parts. That has done phenomenal things. Of course, he was motivated again by the patent clause of the Constitution. That has been key in our growth of technology and our standard living.
Yeah.
Second to none, except for that's fading quickly because of all the government regulations.
Well, I mean, what they're trying to reinstitute, and again, you know, there's a lot of benefits to many things that occurred in the High Middle Ages. One of the ones, and it might have, you know, been a relatively acceptable back then because of the relative utilitarian ignorance of most of the populace. We didn't have the printing press. People could read. So, you know, there were some deficiencies that just we can't understand because we take them for granted. But that being said, you know, they're trying to reinstitute a neo-feudalism. And that's basically what this is. I mean, when you spend the first 6 months of your year working to have it confiscated by income taxes and inflation, you are working for somebody else, and you don't own your land, even if you own your land, because you got to pay the government rent in the form of taxation.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's a neo-feudal system, and that's exactly what they're establishing. But you said something that was very key. You mentioned Robert the Bruce and this other guy, William Wallace.
They may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom!
And that's the battle that we're fighting. Gentlemen, we've got it overtime, so what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to throw it to Kelly for final thoughts, and then we'll go to Chris, and then Tex and I are going to bring it on home. So, Kelly, how would you like to close out your final thoughts regarding tonight's discussion?
I pointed out some significant changes occurred in 1276. Actually, it happened. It was in effect in 1276. 1215, in a field called Runnymede, England. June 15th to 12/15, the Magna Carta was signed. Sword point, King John, but of course he went to the Pope to have an old lie. Those in power who are corrupt do not want accountability. And sure enough, he went to the Pope, had it annulled, but they still enforced it. Now, the barons claimed into the 1300s that they were the protectorate of the people because they would go and confront the king. I got a complaint. The baron group of 25, which is, of course, now developed into the grand jury. But also with that magic document, what happened was they started to have a parliament. And in the 1300s, they started having two houses of parliament, and they actually started to have elections. And eventually, Great Britain had a constitution before the colonies did. And so the Magna Carta was, oh my gosh, we can hold a king to account? We can actually hold our government to account? What a concept. So from 1215, the development, I hate using the word evolution, but the development, oh my gosh, we can do this. We can have representation. We can discuss our problems with the king through, the grand jury or the legislature, the parliament. And then they had a constitution. Of course, they weren't really following it or obeying it. King George wasn't paying attention in the colonies. And we finally kicked them off the continent, started from what good stuff, particularly the British common law, what good stuff they had, they developed into a constitution, and of course the Bill of Rights came later. But this was a fundamental change in history, the Magna Carta. It was absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, but wouldn't it have been easier if some foreign power came and invaded England and forced them to have the Magna Carta and develop this system of liberty in, say, 10 years instead of 800 years?
Well, if you watch the movie Robin Hood...
I know.
But if you watch the movie Robin Hood with Russell Crowe, arguably, historians, okay, it starts out 1199. The French were about to invade. Some of this is actually true. It's arguably historical. Anyway, the French were going to invade, and so I ain't fighting for this king, said the British folk. Your king, you're, and by the way, he was sleeping with baron's wives, and bad King John, as the English history remembers him. He was a bad, bad, bad. And they said, look, in the movie, Russell Crowe says, he said, hey, we won't fight for you unless you have a charter. And all the baron's like, yeah, let's get a charter going. So they all fought, kicked the French off the shores. Then they came back to King John. Again, this is 1199. And he wouldn't sign it. Well, there was the barons, the northern barons were kicked. They finally invaded and took over London. King John had to flee. So pretty soon, hey, look, we'll have an offer of peace here. You're going to sign this charter. And then we'll give you back London, and we'll all work together. And it was a rough time in British history because it comes out real simple. Nations rise and fall. Why? Because people don't want to fight for a corrupt king anymore. They get invaded,
they're done. After he signed it, he hunted them all down, too.
Yes, he did. Yeah, and there was two archbishops, they were Catholic. It was two or three of them that they wrote the Magna Carta. It was originally written in Latin. But anyway, they got excommunicated by the Pope.
Well, let's be clear about it. It wasn't because of the problems with the Magna Carta, because remember, the Magna Carta kind of, essentially the first clause established the freedom of the church, which is what the Pope's principal concern would be. But the fact is let's be honest about it. It was signed under coercion. It was supposed to be a peace treaty, not a list of liberties. It's what it evolved to be. So, in that regard, you would understand why there would be the excommunication of the rebellious barons. But again, this is a matter of governmental prudence, so it wouldn't be really under the auspices of the church. But again, what we sometimes tend to do is romanticize our past a little bit too much. I mean, the Magna Carta was certainly a stepping stone in the right direction, but just like every other human endeavor, we tend to take one step forward, two steps back, and then two steps forward and one step back. It's never perfect. Even the Constitution, let's look at it. It's got some really ugly things in there,
They stay in there
because we don't take an eraser to it, which is good,
right.
You have to look at the errors of the past. But you're absolutely right. I mean, if you really think about it, that's 800 years. It took us, I would say at the time, it took us 500 or 600 years to get to the point where we could write the U.S. Constitution based on historical precedent. And in 100 years, they've managed to basically shred that document.
Exactly, because of all the rivers of cash coming in. That's the problem with Rome.
Yeah, well, let me throw you, this was the thought of the year a couple of years ago about politics, okay? Now, the Hebrews were given a constitution, which was the Torah, okay, the Hebrew nation. They got together, they got some land, they had their 12 tribes or 12 states, and God himself threw his hat into the political arena. Their system was judges and prophets, no kings, and then that was their downfall. But even God's political system failed, not because God has error in him, but man has error in himself. So what's the point of this? All political systems fail without accountability.
Absolutely.
Well, of course.
That's precisely why the system
is. If there's no check on power, then power will grow, you know, without end. And once power realizes that there's no check on it, it will attract the wrong sort of people, and then they'll start ruling by, you know, their whim, their fiat, whatever they happen to wake up in the morning, however they feel. That's the nature of government, and who's going to stop them at that point? And that's why you have to write things like checks and balances into the system. And that's why it's important to maintain those checks and balances.
Well, right.
And unfortunately, our leaders don't care about it anymore.
Right. Well,
I don't know that they don't care about it. I think they care about it very much. They want it out of their way.
Right.
Yeah,
you know,
they want to get rid of the Constitution because it's in their way. Hey, Jerkoff, that's the point. Yeah, Mr. President, we're
ready to be led.
But, hey, Jerkoff, that's the point. It's supposed to be in your way. It was designed to be in your way. So, yes, it's in your way. You're affirming the fact that it works.
Well, do you think the Founding Fathers ever thought that the Speaker of the House of Representatives would ever say, Mr. President, we're ready to be led?
If you'd like, I think I've got that clip.
You think they can
right
see that shit?
Hold on. Let me find that for you. You
All
want
right.
to hear that clip? This is the Speaker of the House talking about how he is ready to be led. Sorry, that's a different
wrong
recorded conversation. I apologize for that. Let's see. Boehner, here we go.
Mr. President, this is your moment. We're ready to be led.
I mean, there you go. You got the head of an independent body of government, arguably probably the most powerful body of government envisioned in the Constitution, the Speaker of the House of Representatives. And this jackass is like, I don't know, tell me what to do. There you go. There's your problem.
Kelly,
yeah.
Thank you for that. I think that we will need a whole nother show to get into Magna Carta and its history because we are just about running out of time. But if you will remind me at some point in the near future that that is something that we should be addressing, we'll have a show on that other than when breaking news like Karl Rove building a new super conservative kill pack gets in the way. But thanks
right,
for joining us. You want to give us your final thoughts?
Well, yeah, it's real simple. 2 points. A good government acknowledges in writing the natural laws that are in our heart, i.e. the Bill of Rights, etc., court cases. Number two, for a government to sustain and be reasonable, there must be accountability to enforce the written rights that are natural in our hearts.
Mm-hmm. Amen. Kelly, thank you very much. And could you please give us a little plug for your book and your website?
Well, sure. I know the reason why, number two, we must enforce our rights that are written down. That's why I wrote the book, The Hidden Fourth Branch, about the power of the grand jury. Website is hiddenfourthbranch.com, number 4TH, hiddenfourthbranch.com. And you can also learn there how to submit a complaint to a grand jury. So.
All right, sounds good.
Excellent.
Thank you, sir. Trog, we're to you, my friend.
Gentlemen, I was going to say, as you guys were talking about the accountability thing, you know, of course, that there's a variety of things involved in there. You know, you talk about the lateral and the horizontal, you know, how the Founding Fathers put the country together. But I had one that kept running through my mind over and over again, probably because I've done about 13 shows on this, the Second Amendment. That's just what kept hitting me in the head. Bottom line is, you know, once you take the arms away from people and all them checks and balances don't mean crap, because they're stepping on them, you know, even with an armed population, because they will push the bloody edge continually. And that is why one of the biggest battles going on right now in our country is the Second Amendment. And, you know, because got to get them guns out of people's hands, or it used to be swords and spears and bows and arrows, you know, in the old days. But that's the bottom line. All tyrants know that an armed population is the last final checks and balance system. And I know nobody on the national level wants to have this discussion. I listened to the Senate hearing. You know, I've been all over the Second Amendment thing since the Connecticut shooting. But nobody wants to talk about this. They just they want to kind of skirt that, like it's kind of a weird conversation. And it isn't a weird conversation. It's an important one.
It's fundamental.
Right, that's my... Yeah.
No, it's fundamental. Look, let's understand something. I mean, ultimately, you know, this side of heaven, it is might makes right. It
mm-hmm.
has always been might makes right since you know, Cain struck Abel.
Right.
And the fact is that if you want a system of justice, it has to be backed up to check the might. If all the might is on the side of the government, unless you happen to have a fair, just, and benevolent dictator or monarch, you will always have a small group that will take over. Well, there has been times when it's been the case in the past, but if you will, otherwise you always have a small group who will take over for their own benefit and plunder. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And so you have to have that counterbalance, and that is the people have equal parity in arms with the government. Now, that does not create anarchy like some people will think. Are there always going to be anarchists and criminals amongst us? Yes,
mm-hmm.
But for by and large, if there is room for self-expression, religious liberty, and self-determination and private property secured by the government, then the arms of the people will never be used against that authority. But unless
right.
the people have recourse to those arms, that authority will always grow and subjugate. That is just a historic fact. It is human nature. It will not change until time gives way to eternity. Not understanding that is the biggest fundamental flaw in any kind of political discourse. And the reason that the Second Amendment is not the First Amendment is because giving people arms without giving them reason for the arms would have been stupid. So you look at them in order. The right to freedom of religion, not just freedom of worship, freedom of religion and the exercise thereof, a free press, free speech, okay, redress of grievances, and right to assemble, and then the
mm-hmm.
Second Amendment that says the right to bear arms shall not be infringed, because that's the teeth behind that first one. Without that Second Amendment, you got no First Amendment. Without a First Amendment, you have no reason for a Second Amendment, because it'll just be lawlessness with a Hobbesian war of all against all. That's how it
mm-hmm.
works. And I know Chris has done at least, what, 15 shows on this?
13 or so, yeah.
13 or so, that's a good number. That's Christ and his 12 apostles. Some people have triskaidekaphobia, the fear of the number 13. I think it's a good number.
I'll probably do another one tomorrow
13
night.
Colonies.
There you go, 13 mm-hmm. colonies, exactly. So can you plug the show, and then we're going to go to Tex, and then I'll close
sure.
it out.
Yeah, Blog Talk Radio, same format that you guys are on, and Robert's on with Bard's Logic, Coalition of Freedom, and the Facebook group, Coalition of Freedom. Type it in, search, come and join us. We do good work there. But
awesome.
I, like I say, I'll do another show tomorrow night. There's a lot of things that have just transpired in the last couple of days. So, you know, we're on it again.
Excellent. All right. Well, thanks for joining us, Chris. And we'll go to Tex right after this.
Conan, what is best in life? To crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and to hear the lamentation of your women.
That is good.
That is good.
Second Amendment. All right. Tex, you want to wrap up our Rovian evening?
Yeah. I just want to say that, look, the bat was joined with Karl Rove here and his pack, and fortunately, he's being laughed out of the Twitterscape with it, but the reality is Karl Rove doesn't care what you say about him on Twitter, period. He probably doesn't even check it. He has someone who's paid to check it, and he probably gets a report once a week on it that he doesn't read or give much of a shit about.
The reality is what he cares about is the fact that he's talking to the powerful political donors and that they're giving him millions of dollars every day in order to take the party away from you, and that's what he really listens to. And the Twitterscape doesn't matter. So what you have to do is join the battle, join the fight. Get with your congressmen, the people who represent you, speak with them in whatever means you can, show up to where they are, and voice your concerns. And then, you know, a next generation has to stand up and start getting elected to leadership positions or getting elected to positions that select the leadership position in order to turn things around, because otherwise it's not going anywhere. So that's kind of the issue of the day. This is a battle that has been joined, and it's a fight for the heart and soul of the Republican Party, but it's not really a battle for the heart and soul of the conservative movement, because the conservative movement knows what it believes, and we don't believe what Karl Rove believes, but yet he claims to be our leader. So, you know, it's a leader without a party. It's a leader with just a bunch of money behind him, and, you know, I'm just not following the money. I'm not going along with where the money goes. I don't really care about that. That's not why I vote. So, you know, I think the line's been drawn in the sand, and it's time to have the fight.
Yep. Couldn't agree more. When we think of Karl Rove, the only thing that comes to mind is Jeff Spinoli.
You dick!
You know, I think that we're obviously going to keep talking about this, but as you're listening to this, I think that, you know, the Karl Rove issue is pretty important. And I'm just going to quote Mark Levin and then do a little final rant before we close out. Mark Levin, regarding this, said, you know, is Obama trying to destroy the Republican Party? No. The Republican establishment is destroying the Republican Party. The only reason they're in the majority in the House is because of conservatives. Conservatives across the country, the grassroots. They lost the Senate. They like to point to two races, one in Missouri and one in Indiana. I can point to 10 races where there were liberal to moderate Republicans who lost, and of course they never mentioned that. You know, the fact of the matter is, from my opinion, I'm not trying to project it on you, until the Republican leadership that has brought us McCain and Romney, that has a feckless RNC, a preposterously incompetent get-out-the-vote operation, is removed and replaced with fresh, smart, confident, knowledgeable people, until some of our backbenchers move to the front, some of the young Tea Party conservative candidates who can articulate our vision and our principles, this is going to continue. As I said it before, the USS GOP is already sunk, and as my illustrious co-host has said before, they didn't even bother rearranging the deck chairs. Okay? Is this ship worth raising? I think so, especially on the national stage. But your mission, and you don't really have a choice but to accept it, is to promote conservatism, authentic conservatism, wherever you find it. Don't sit back, don't expect someone else to do it, and don't delay, because it is dire. And some of our darkest moments in our history have become our best, and this can be one of them. But not if you sit on your ass, stuff your face with Cheetos, and watch Beyonce shake her ass on TV. It's only if you get up off that couch, you make some calls, you make some noise, you go to party meetings, you call your senators, you call your congressman, you call your governor, and you share the Tex and Rex show with everybody that you find. Because Tex and Rex are two absolute geniuses that have nailed the conservative movement, and we know what it's about, and the Republicans need to hear this message delivered in our wonderful, irreverent style. So for you boys and girls out there in radio land, go to Blog Talk Radio, find the Tex and Rex Show page, and follow the show. Find us on Facebook at the Tex and Rex Show. Like the page, and you will receive notifications of when we are broadcasting. Our regular times are 10 p.m. Eastern Standard on Sundays, and we may pop up here and there to do random shows depending on the news of the day or how dire the situation is. Remember that liberty is only going to be alive if you vigilantly keep your eye on it, fight for it, and be willing to lay your life down on it. We look forward to seeing you next week. This is Tex and Rex, signing off.
The flame to liberty will never die.